This is Wade's World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? You want to see how we get around? Why don't you come visit me on the
East? This is Wade Rathkin. You're listening to Wade's World, a voice of the people program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org and acornradio.org. A podcast will be available to the show on these websites and www.affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world. And today we're talking to Rob Davidson, Executive Director of Council for the Bighorn Range in Wyoming. Welcome to Wade's World, Rob.
Well, thank you for having me, Wade.
Well, my pleasure. We better tell people where the Bighorn Range is. Obviously, this show is being broadcast in the south right now and elsewhere. Where is the Bighorn Range, Rob?
We're in northeast Wyoming and about just south of the Montana border. And the Bighorn Range runs about 130 miles north and south into central Wyoming. And it also is the headwaters of two major portions of into the Yellowstone River, with the Bighorn Basin and the Powder River Basin.
And people mainly know the Powder River Basin because of coal extraction, don't they?
Considerably, yeah. It is the leading coal producing region in the United States.
I read something.
The Bighorn Basin is also famous for quite a bit of oil production.
Well, I was about to say, and some of your background is in the oil industry as well, isn't it?
Yes, I worked 34 years in the oil and gas industry, from exploration to pipelines and terminals.
And when you talk about it being more than 100 miles, 140 miles north to south, how far does it go sort of east to west in the way you look at it?
East to west is as narrow as 20 miles, and it is broad as about 55 miles down at the southern end. Kind of think almost like a pork chop, chop-shaped piece.
I know we met recently in Sheridan, Wyoming. I've been lucky enough to have a trailer on the sort of west side of the Bighorn Range and heard about Rob's work. This is a fairly young organization, isn't it, Rob?
Yeah, it is. We have really only been around for about 2.5 years.
And what led you to take this step? Background in oil industry and whatever. What made you care so deeply about the Bighorn Range?
Since even as a teenager in the 1970s, I've kind of been working in the background in environmental issues and such. I got into the oil and gas industry primarily to support a family. And that was the way to do it and be able to stay in this region. But I've always worked kind of in the shadows or in the background on wilderness protection. And then finally, when I retired from the oil and gas industry, the Bighorn Range, which considers, we're talking about 4 million acres of BLM land, Bureau of Land Management land, and about 1 million acres of forest land managed by the Forest Service. They had a lot of issues that were coming up here, and there was nobody else really around to address those issues with the public and with the land managers.
Well, give people a sense of some of the issues. I know when we were talking, you were describing a fairly recent victory of the council in terms of just keeping the protection of the U.S. Forest Service for these sort of four-county area that includes the Bighorn Range. How did that work out?
It worked out well. It was a really great advance and victory for us. Trying to keep Forest Service people on the forest, not in the office. So what the Forest Service was trying to do was consolidate the district rangers into just two offices from three. And they were kind of doing it rolling along with it without any sort of public input. We found out about it and acted on it and got local government officials excited about it, the public, and finally was able to involve our congressional delegation into sort of readjusting the stage, and we did win. So we now still have three district rangers. They still have a lot of other budget issues that it's going to help, but we need to keep that presence on the forest for education, for enforcement, and basically for the protection of the environment. We need those good folks on the ground with a community face.
Well, and the area that they were each required to cover is huge. I mean, when people talk about a county in Arkansas or Louisiana, a parish in Louisiana or whatever, that's one thing. But counties in Wyoming can be almost as big as states. So this is they had a lot of land to look after, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And historically, the district rangers actually lived on the forest. But they migrated out to the communities and basically using the excuse, you know, because there were more roads and fuel was cheap, it was just easier just to drive out from point to point. It's kind of a nationwide issue. And particularly, it's talking about several different geographic areas that these people had to cover.
Well, certainly, if you cross the Bighorns at the top, you're talking about heavily protected forest, the way you associate with big pines, but down below, it's more grasslands, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, grasslands and sagebrush steppe, which is kind of a mixing grasslands and kind of high desert country. If people want to imagine it, thinking of some of it is red rock country, similar to southeast Utah. So it's a great diversity of climates and habitat. It's a really incredible country.
And sort of compared to other areas of Wyoming, certainly Yellowstone and the far western part of the state, this is the Bighorns are sort of a hidden jewel almost, even though they're hidden in the wide open, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They are. And a lot of people discover them when they're going to Yellowstone, especially if they come up the northern routes. And so we're getting people that are actually moving into this area, kind of have happenstance discovered it by traveling through here to Yellowstone.
Well, you know, we're not trying to tell everybody the secret, but part of what it takes to protect it is the kind of work y'all are doing. Are you finding a lot of support for these sort of conservation and environmentalist concerns you're raising?
We are. But we are also getting, there's a considerable amount of resistance, pro-development forces in this state, in Wyoming and across the West, and also a perception that these public lands need to go away and they need to privatize them or bring them under state control, which would free up a lot of this area without the federal oversight. You wouldn't have NEPA. That's one of the biggest things is the difference between state control and federal control is the public is involved almost at every step of the way through the National Environmental Policy Act. This state in particular does not have any of that kind of mechanism. It's kind of decided between industry and at the local government level, county commissioners and with the state governor's office. And the public really doesn't have a platform to interact with those here.
Well, and it's also it's not even an open secret, but the power of extraction companies, oil, coal, and others, and the legislature in Cheyenne is monumental, isn't it?
It is, and money talks. 70% of the revenue that comes into this state is from severance taxes and use taxes from the oil and gas industry and from coal. Kind of makes us unique among a lot of the red states is that they actually do tax industry. Maybe not to world prices or whatever, but they do, and that is to say, that supports our education system, road and bridges, and all that.
Now, is the footprint, I know the footprint of the oil industry is throughout the Bighorns. How about how about in the area you're focused on? Is there much strip mine, or what's the nature of the coal
actually,
impact?
In the Bighorn Range in the mountains itself is actually pretty mineral poor.
Uh-huh.
So the Forest Service lands are not strictly threatened. The BLM lands, the federal government in the Powder River Basin holds enormous amount of the minerals, although they don't have much of the surface. In the Bighorn Basin, the federal government controls about 80% of the surface and the minerals. So the federal government is actually a very big player here.
And that's something that's a contentious issue. You mentioned the issue raised by people about wanting more. I mean, I just read today there was somebody, these Oregon fights about land use and ranchers have been huge.
Right.
Is that same kind of problem also evincing itself in Wyoming?
If you're talking like the Malheur incident 2 years ago and 3 years ago, there is some of that here. There's some of that kind of more radical, the land doesn't actually belong to the federal government. It actually belongs to the people who first settled here and the water and all that, particularly in kind of our southeast corner down the KC area and such. There's a lot of that feeling. And the legislature has been incredibly influenced by what's going on in Utah. We're trying to get that transfer going on. So, yeah, we are seeing those same issues here.
Well,
it's not the gun. They haven't brought out the guns yet.
Well, praise the Lord. We're talking to Rob Davidson, who's the executive director of the Council for the Bighorn Range, this very, very special and beautiful area in the northeastern part of Wyoming, one of our least populated states, but one of the largest, the 10th largest in the United States. So it's a big piece of ground.
Mm-hmm.
4 million acres, he was saying. Now, one of the Interior Department has become sort of an advocate of these kinds of causes. I mean, you read regularly about dissatisfaction and alienation of career Forest Service employees, BLM employees, and others. Retirement rates are way up. How does this impact the Bighorn Range area?
We've seen a sudden spike in the Forest Service. We've gone from, we have a forest plan that calls for about 6 million board feet of timber to come out of here. And they've been bumping along for 10 years at 2 million board feet. And now all of a sudden we're seeing a push up to 12 million board feet.
Wow.
Which is not sustainable. And a lot of it is because of change in direction in Washington.
Now, did the public have any chance to have input in that kind of decision?
Some of the timber sales they're running on right now have been in the pipe or in the process for some years. And so it's really tough to derail or at least get people to stand back and look at those.
Uh-huh.
What the public can do now, though, is stuff that is 2 and 3 and 4 years down the road that is new or has changed enough that it needs kind of a relook, kind of a rehearing, so a new scoping. And that's what we're working on really hard right now, is paying attention to these new projects or amended projects that are coming up and that we can get involved in. We're involved in a couple right now. One is a Buffalo Municipal Watershed project where they want to do a lot of clear cutting in areas that are greater than 40 acres. And so we're involved in the objection process on those right now once they come out.
Now, is there a formal environmental impact statement required in those issues, or just there's an opportunity for public impact?
The way it works is when they put the scoping out, then the public can actually comment in, and then they make the decision based on those comments and their own findings to move it to the next step. That's where it gets a little tricky. And then you get through those steps, and it gets to, say, to wherever it stops, which is either for a supervisor or stops down in Denver or stops in Washington, you have to go through all that before you could ever consider a lawsuit. And then we work together with groups like Earth Justice and some others, and to look at that to make sure that we can't stop a lot of this stuff, at least make sure that they're doing it to the T as the law allows.
And does the regular Wyoming voice matter, or does it really mean that you're having to spend a lot of time trying to get experts involved and every other kind of skill set in order to have a chance to win these things?
We do have to reach out, and a lot of times it's people offer this, you know, we have some experts, especially some retired Forest Service people and BLM people who kind of offer their services to make sure that we got our ducks in a row, that we use the Forest Service's own terminology kind of against them if we need to, and actually work with people that are inside the Forest Service now to kind of deflect or change some of these things. This cutting's going to go on. These road building's going to go on, but we need to make sure that they do it only when absolutely necessary, you know, for the health of the forest and the wildlife. And that's one of our biggest issues, is the loss of habitat.
I know there was a very timely piece. I mean, they must have been looking at our schedule to talk, Rob, because there was a piece on the front page of the New York Times today about the Interior Department trying to gut out the Endangered Species Act in order to be able to build more roads through forest land, regardless of the impact on species, and to use economics, how much it would cost to protect species as a reason to allow them to do whatever they darned well pleased. I don't know if you've had a chance to catch up with this, or you probably saw the news way before I did or heard about this, but this could be huge and have a very bad impact on the bighorns as well, wouldn't it?
Yes, it will. We do have species of concern here. And actually, what you're talking about, Wade, too, is it's kind of a multi-front assault on the Endangered Species Act. Our Senator Barrasso, who is probably number four, number five in the Senate leadership, is pushing this very hard. In fact, they're having hearings today on changes to the law and what the, to in quotes, modernize it, basically to gut it and basically turn it over to the species, over to the states. And then in the Interior Department is working within the existing law the way it is now and trying to administratively hamper it. One of the biggest things they're trying to do is uncouple a lot of the times in the NEPA process, when the Endangered Species Act is being used, is all the federal agencies that are involved with water and fish and wildlife and whatever need to talk together. And what they're trying to do is stovepipe this, where they can't, all they have to work in is with their particular mantra, their particular domain. They don't, the Forest Service would not have to talk to the Fish and Wildlife Service. The BLM would not have to talk to the EPA when they're making decisions about species and species protections. So it's effectively trying to neuter the whole process, it's part of an all-out assault on NEPA, on the National Environmental Policy Act. And this does directly affect the bighorn very much as we continue to have projects.
Are there particular endangered species in the bighorn that people would recognize?
We historically used to have Canadian lynx down here. We used to have wolverines in this area, which are also species of concern. They're not quite on the Endangered Species Act, but they are the subject of a lot of litigation going on right now that could impact those species ever reestablishing themselves back into this area.
And how about bighorn sheep themselves? Are they in pretty good shape?
No, they're not. As a matter of fact, bighorn sheep were the dominant megafauna in this area, in this region, 150 years ago. But with white settlement, with the Euro-American expansion into this area, and they brought their domestic sheep herds into here, it decimated the bighorn sheep. There is a small reintroduced population that is severely constrained just to one area out there on Wade's on your west side, up in the Shell Canyon area.
Oh, okay.
But they're having a hard time. But there's also other species that were introduced here that were not here at that time, which is moose. They brought moose in from the Midwest, upper Midwest and Minnesota. And I'm just like with other species, to give people opportunity to do something to hunt. And so that's impacted other things. I worked with one group where they brought in trout, foreign trout, up into the wilderness and stuff, and they are not native to this area.
So they will definitely eat out the other trout too.
Well, eat out the especially the small amphibians and stuff. They're a predator. They're just an aquatic predator in a lot of ways, and so we've lost a lot of the diversity of some of the aquatic life in those high alpine regions too.
I know until 2017, my trailer was in Montana, and we saw bighorn sheep all the time up there in mm-hmm. the Red Rock Canyon where we were, and it was literally a daily occurrence. If we were on the dirt road, it was a Forest Service area, protected. But we spent, we had the glasses out coming through Shell Canyon to see if we could spot anything, and never could see one, but it's just as you're mm-hmm. saying, we certainly... Coming into the meadows, we definitely saw a moose near where all the construction is on the west side. So it's and then last year we were up off the road near the Swede's grave and whatever up in that area, and just dropped a line in this little creek, and I'm trying to signal to my son because all of a sudden mama and papa moose and a baby were right across the water and more than 20 feet away from him. So you didn't want him crossing to, have a talk to him. But it's a magical area. We're talking to Rob Davidson, who's the executive director and one of the founders of Council for the Bighorn Range, a very special part of America that needs protection, but is also part of the slipstream under attack by the current administration in terms of turning over federal lands to, pretty much corporate say-so. Rob, how in the world do you keep up with all this? There's nothing so soul-crunching as bureaucratic hearings where you're outmatched by lawyers and, corporate experts and whatever. You must be running all the time from, pillar to post.
We are. We do have some good volunteers, though. Which help enormously. We're still growing. And a lot of times is tying in other groups around here, especially some regional and some national groups. A perfect example would be sage-grouse. I just haven't been around long enough to be involved with what's going on with the sage-grouse. I personally have seen their decline. In the Powder River Basin side, the Bighorn Basin side, they're not doing so bad. So we have to make that to work with other groups. I think is a lot of times in drawing on their expertise. Like I mentioned, like using Earth Justice to look over some things, or to use larger groups like Wilderness Watch to help us with issues on the Cloud Peak Wilderness. That's one thing I didn't mention about the area that we cover. Of the 1.1 million acres there of Bighorn National Forest, 17% of it is part of the Cloud Peak Wilderness, which has been wilderness or primitive area since the 1930s.
And has a different level of protection, doesn't it?
It does. It has probably the ultimate level of protection. It's probably the most managed, in a sense, oddly enough, being called a wilderness, of any area in the forest. visitors have to comply to certain rules and to keep it wild as possible.
But it'll have some, I mean, I don't think, now I don't know, maybe you do. Now, these new rules from the Interior Department, are they going after these most protected wilderness areas as well? I know they're all over the outskirts, but have they really proposed being able to go? Well, I guess now that I'm talking, in Alaska, they're definitely going out in the wilderness areas now, aren't they?
Right. What we have here, the Department of Interior manages 11, what are called wilderness study areas that were created in the 1980s, and they're up for, some of them are up for grabs right now. We do have two of them that these changes, the Endangered Species Act and the change, trying to change the rules on the sagebrush, will sage grouse will be impacted, and that's Fortification Creek wilderness study area, which does have some species and concerns, particularly sage grouse. And we have over on the west side wild horses and such that may be altered or changed how they're managed over there on the west side. So, yeah, these do impact our bighorns.
Well, it's one issue after another, but... obviously, Earth Justice used to be the Sierra Club Legal Defense Fund, I think, and yes. Having these groups involved, do they actually have offices in the footprint of the bighorns, or are you having to, get on your knees and yell to D.C., or how does that work?
Like Earth Justice, pretty much we're fairly close to Bozeman, Montana. And that's where they come out. The Wilderness Society also has offices in Bozeman, Montana. There's some help. But Sierra Club here is particularly used to have an office, they had a regional office here in Sheridan, but they've kind of pulled back out of these intermountain regions. And they don't have much grassroots activities. They kind of depend on groups like mine to do the grassroots work. And... So they're not really a very effective force like the Sierra Club isn't here.
Well, and for those of us who know something of the distances, Bozeman is not necessarily next door to the Bighorns.
No, it's not.
give us some sense of what's next for the Council of the Bighorn Range. What's on your immediate agenda that you're having to deal with right now, Bob?
A lot of it is building right now is building new roads for several of these projects, which would be like the Buffalo Municipal Water Supply Project, where they want to do a lot of clear cutting and a lot of new roads, some of them in designated roadless areas. And the idea is they're trying to protect these municipal watersheds from fire and the sedimentation that can occur when they're running downstream. Our contention is that these are not really fire-prone areas, and if they are, they still produce less sediment and fill a lot of this road construction because they're notoriously bad. We have literally tens of millions of dollars of reconstruction, and naturalization has not been done on existing roads already. And now they're proposing to add 70 more miles of road. So that's really the number one issue right now on our plate.
Rob, you're obviously, got your hands full. How do people, our listeners who have been to the West or care about the West, or, in my case, obviously, actually go up there regularly and were born in that area, how can they give you some more support? Is there a way they can get in touch if they've got questions or a way they can make a donation or any old thing? Let people know what they can do to help you.
Well, the first thing I think would be just to contact me directly right now, and that is through my email, and that is rdavidson, R-D-A-V-I-D-S-O-N, at council, C-O-U-N-C-I-L, bighorn, B-I-G-H-O-R-N, Range, RANG.org. That Council Bighorn Range is one word.
No periods, no dashes, no underscore. And no. I'm sure if they get in touch with you, you'll tell them if they want to send you 5 or 10 or 100, how to do that.
Exactly.
I know one of the discussions we had, you might even have a membership program. I'm already lining up for that. Rob, thank you so much. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard. And as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen, will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week when we have another guest, this is Wade Rathke from Wade's World. Thank you.